It's Monday, March 19th, 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to KCAW in Sitka. I'm Chris Todd with Raven News. The Coast Guard commander for Alaska says the actions of the sole survivor of a fatal 2010 helicopter crash directly contributed to the deaths of his colleagues and destruction of the aircraft. Rear Admiral Thomas Ostebo, in administrative remarks for Lieutenant Lance Leon's personnel file, says Leon's failure to perform his required duties directly contributed to the accident. This comes less than 2 weeks after the Coast Guard dismissed negligent homicide and other charges against Leon. Leon, in 2010, was the co-pilot of an MH-60 Jayhawk helicopter flying from Astoria, Oregon, to the crew's base in Sitka when it hit an unmarked span of low-hanging wires and crashed off the Oregon coast. Leon was called to Juneau on Sunday to meet with Ostebo, where he refused to sign Ostebo's report. About half a dozen Alaskan communities will see increased ferry service in the near future. Two are in the southwest part of the state, and the rest are in southeast. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfield has details.
Two small communities near Kodiak will be the newest Alaska Marine Highway ports. One is Uzinki on Spruce Island, about 10 miles northwest of Kodiak. The other is Old Harbor, about 70 miles to the southwest of the island's biggest city. Ferry Chief Mike Newsell says Uzinki's new dock is under construction.
Uzinki will likely happen as soon as the fendering system gets completed. That'll happen this spring with service to Kodiak a couple times a month. And Old Harbor, we're still looking at the options for how to provide that service, but they have a dock that's ready to go, and it's compatible with all of our ships.
The state estimates each town has about 200 residents. In southeast, the new Rainforest Islands ferry plans to begin service mid-July. It will connect Prince of Wales Island's Kaufman Cove to Wrangell, Petersburg, Myers Chuck, and Saxman, which is next to Ketchikan. Marketing coordinator Heather Hedges told the Southeast Conference's Transportation Committee that the one-ship system will target tourists as well as locals.
We're going to try and develop itineraries on the website to help people ride in one direction on the Rainforest Islands ferry and leaving Hollis on the IFA. Travel loops between Ketchikan, Wrangell, and Petersburg will also be marketed. We're hoping to capture not only our own market share, but help to increase traffic on both IFA and AMHS.
The Kaufman Cove-based North End Port Authority is buying and overhauling the 160-foot-long ship, which will carry about 70 passengers and 14 vehicles. It will provide the first regular ferry service to Myers Chuck, with a few dozen residents about 40 miles northwest of Ketchikan. The Rainforest Islands Ferry is a new service that will replace the Inter-Island Ferry Authority's northern route. That linked Kaufman Cove to Wrangell and Petersburg for several summers, but ended because ridership was small. The IFA continues to sail one of its two ships between Ketchikan and Hollis on Prince of Wales Island. General Manager Dennis Watson says money's been tight, but business may be on the way up.
We are providing service. We're still doing it 7 days a week. You know, we're making it. We're hoping for better things. The economy on the island looks a little better, at least in Craig. It looks a little better than it did the year before. We have some positive sales tax quarters, and hopefully the visitor industry is going to pick up.
The authority hopes to reduce costs by selling its second ship to the state. The Inter-Island Ferry Authority and the North End Port Authority are independent from the Alaska Marine Highway System. The state system, meanwhile, has released a draft schedule for fall of this year and winter and spring of next year. Officials are taking written comments through March 22nd and will hold a public teleconference March 27th. Marine Operations Deputy Commissioner Newsell says he wants ferry users to know they can have a say.
The one thing that I frequently hear when people call to complain about the schedule is that they didn't know that a public process existed for them to weigh in up front before that schedule ever got published.
Most of the schedule's changes involve ships undergoing maintenance or overhaul and other ships assigned to fill in. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
You can read the proposed new ferry schedules through links posted with this report on our website. There's also some information about your opportunity to comment. One of the largest remaining pieces of World War II armament in Alaska is located on a tiny island in the mouth of Cross Sound, not too far from Glacier Bay. Residents of nearby Elfin Cove and Pelican have known about the big gun on George Island since it was put there early in the war. But it was only last year that the Forest Service redeveloped the historic trail to the battery, and a Sitka historian scoured military archives to piece together the gun's bizarre story. Matt Hunter is a lifetime resident of Sitka who now teaches math at Mount Edgecombe High School. He's assembled 2,000 pages of archives on the Navy section base built in a cannery near Port Althrop, about 3 miles from the gun. Barth Hamburg is a landscape architect with the Forest Service. Theirs may be among the best Alaskan war stories you've never heard. KCAW's Rob Woolsey spoke with both men recently.
I've always been interested in aviation, and I was interested in airplanes since I was really little, and I started to read about the Battle of Britain and World War II. And then I learned that Sitka had a history, and my dad, who arrived here in 1980, got to drive across the runway to go see the causeway, the World War II causeway. And everybody in Sitka talks about the underground hospital out there, or used to, which as a young kid sounded like an underground skyscraper that you could wander through these mazes of passageways. And it turned out not to be that far from the truth, really. It wasn't a hospital, it was a gun battery. But being able to bike around on Japonsky Island and find pillboxes in the woods and trenches that are still there really spiked the imagination. There's a Navy document online that lists the bases in Alaska, and Port Althrop was there, so I looked it up on Google Earth to see where it was, and didn't really know much about it until this summer. I got a phone call from Barth Hamburg, who's the trails architect for the Sitka Ranger District, and recently the Forest Service built a trail to a gun that remains on George Island, which is just 2 or 3 miles from Elfin Cove.
Well, the first time I ever went there was probably about 10 years ago, and it was basically just a game trail that kind of led partially on the old road. The Navy, they actually had to build a real road because this gun is quite big. It's a 6-inch gun. It's basically, we called it a cannon until Matt corrected us on the proper nomenclature for it.
We're talking an 18-ton, so what is that, 36,000-pound steel gun that was hauled about half mile over typical southeast terrain, rocky island. Started on one end of the island, of course, that was sheltered to get to the other end.
Just the natural environment on George Island itself is fantastic because it's like one of those places that you see along the outside coast where it looks like not very long ago the ocean was just washing over the island. And so the rock is very close to the surface, soil's very thin. There's a lot of sea stacks, especially on the exposed side. It's right on the edge of Cross Sound. So when the ocean's rough, there's huge waves to come in and break directly onto George Island. And so it's a very high energy beach right there. And where the gun is located, there's a bedrock shelf that probably goes out 500 feet that only 20-foot high waves probably would break over the top of. It gets all the flow from icy straits, comes out through the Indian Islands and flushes by George Island, so it's tremendously rich marine waters, and there's always whales out in front. There's a lot of sea lions. The salmon that are all going up into icy straits pass right through that area. So the biology there is really rich. The scenery is really rich just from the quality of these really neat sea stacks, these columns of rock that stick straight up out of the beach. And the trail at one point goes along a cliff that drops off a couple hundred feet right into the water. And then, of course, when you get to the gun is intact, which is a really neat thing. All the other guns that I'm aware of in Southeast, they either cut the barrels off or they pushed them into the ocean.
It didn't go so well. They fired it a few times after they got it in place in 1942. And then they covered it up with a tarp, and the base didn't have a lot of extra people to go to George Island. Life on the island was difficult. They had Quonset huts, very little water supply, none in the winter because it would freeze. But in order to fire the gun, they ended up bringing people from Port Althrop along with the gunnery officer, who was an ensign as an acting gunnery officer. And they set up the target and they went through the whole drill. It took an entire day before with a bunch of guys doing everything from painting the deck where people would stand when they fired it to oiling the springs that go inside the tubes. And it was quite an impressive amount of effort. On the fourth shot, the gun mount itself, this brass mount under it, broke. It sheared with a crack, and the gun jumped back a few inches, and the stand where a man could stand on top of came down on a guy's foot and broke his great toe. It was out of commission, I believe, for the rest of the war.
I mean, just to see the thing, if you think at all about how did it possibly get there, you have to understand that it was a difficult, difficult thing to do. But I think, you know, we've talked about installing interpretation on the island, and especially now since we have the information that Matt's got, and sounds like there's even potential for more information up there where we might actually be able to find full site plans of how the whole development was put together. And that would be really a interesting part. We could show what it's like now and what it was like then.
The base dwindled. They ended up shipping men back to Sitka, and the men just started locking up, and they ended up leaving two men there in a matter of about a week. Everyone was gone.
So this gun is still entirely in one piece. It's kind of tilted down a little bit, but if you tilted the gun back up to its normal position, it would be pointed right at the Cape Spencer Lighthouse, which you can see from there. So you're looking directly across on a nice day. Mount Fairweather is right there, all across Sound, Cape Spencer, and it's a beautiful spot.
That story from KCAW's Robert Woolsey. If you'd like to read Matt Hunter's report on Port Alfred and see pictures of the big gun, visit our website at kcaw.org. And that's it for Raven News for this hour. It is currently 23 degrees outside, a few clouds stacking up on the horizon, but otherwise very beautiful and clear this morning.